Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm John Purcell, and I'm sitting across from Brendan Jones, who's come in to talk about 50 Shades of 50, which is a memoir, which is really called a really, really reliable memoir. Welcome.
Thank you, John. Really, really reliable.
Really, really reliable.
Yeah, to the best of my recollection.
And how good is your recollection?
It's pretty good, actually. I'm not, and you know, although I partook in illegal substances when I was young, it hasn't really rotted my brain because I managed to give up when I was young as well.
You've still got a little bit of time too. You're not quite 50.
I'm not quite 50.
That's really the downhill from there, is it?
It is. The sword of Damocles is hanging over my head until I turn 50 in April next year.
So this is a good chance to get in there and put down some memories that you'll probably forget very soon.
Yeah, yes, exactly. I mean, like, you'll ask me after the 3rd of April and I'll go, what? I wrote a book? I got a book now.
Is it that, we're expected to live until 100 these days. So you're really in your midlife crisis period. Is it that kind of thing, or is it I just want to get it down, or I want to examine what I've done now so I can make changes for the future? Why write a memoir?
Yeah, it's like a half life report card, and you know, and if I do indeed live like a Galapagos turtle to 100, then it's then good. I'm not having a midlife crisis. I don't have a problem with turning 50. I have more of a problem with turning 27. I think that was more of a...
Just getting past that dangerous year.
Yeah, you know, because like all of a sudden that's when you're going from a kid to a grown-up. Mm. So I think once
Do you spew and die or not?
Exactly.
These important questions.
Yeah, these are the big questions. So, and because I had kids so young, in my 30s, in 20s even, I was, you know, raising children. And then my 40s, I feel like I've got adult children now. Mm. You know, so what next? So this is a good time to write a book.
And with adult children... In the house, sitting down and writing a memoir. Were there any comments from, say, this is kind of embarrassing for a dad to be.
Yeah, there is. There's I think like my eldest son read it, and in the book, you know, all the stuff that I tell him not to do, I actually do in the book, which is awkward. And then my youngest son, who goes to a nice private school, said, oh, Dad, I'm going to, you know, donate your book to the library. Your book will be in our school library. And I went, oh, mate, you know, do we have to? Can't we put, you know, Tale of Two Cities or something else, you know, something worthwhile? So, and my youngest is a really voracious reader. And I was watching him at the launch the other night and he was reading it. And I'm going, oh,
no.
What's he up to?
You know, well, I remember there was I can't remember what anniversary it was, but there was an edition of Puberty Blues that came out and Gabrielle Carey was writing... an introduction to it, and she was saying that now her daughter was 18 and she was trying to instruct and teach the kid what to do, and she's going, Mum, just I've read the book, I'm never going to do anything as bad as you've done yourself. Are there things in there that you your kids have already gone past some of the trouble years, and you've still got opportunities there with the younger kids, but they look at it and go, what were you thinking?
What was I thinking? Yeah, I think Dominic sort of, he's been making jokes about you know, some of my early days there. And I just, it really, yeah, it's quite awkward, you know, because he goes, oh, so, well, tell me about, you know, when you're at art school and that girl, or, you know, tell me about, and you think, and he goes, and how old were you when you started smoking? You know, you say 12, you know, 12. And I said, well, that doesn't mean go and start smoking because you're 15. You know, back then, everyone smoked. And dabbling with alcohol and things like that, I just think...
What about other things? So, I've got a 20-year-old, in the house, and so, and he's not doing much.
Right, yeah, as they all do.
But, you know, in your early life, you have this list of things that you tried or you did to make a buck.
Yes.
Is that an encouragement, or is it, oh, thank God, I don't have to do what Dad did?
Yeah, I don't know how they look at that. I know that, and I don't know if it's a compliment, they just said, you know, you just can't stay focused. You end up just doing, you do everything. And I'm a bit like that. It's like on any weekend, if I'm doing chores, I'll have, you know, I'll be working on a motorbike 1 minute, and then all of a sudden I'll be working on the pool filter, and then I'll be working on the dishwasher. And then, you know, everything's in bits. And my wife says, well, you know, just focus on one. Fix one and then move on to the next one. So I think in my early days, I used to do a lot of that with the different jobs I'd have. You know, I'd get a job and then I'd be gung-ho on it. And then another job would come along, and I'd sort of go, well, I might go and do that. And then all of a sudden, I'd be in another job.
And how did radio? I mean, you did all these different things. It didn't seem like you were heading towards radio, and then suddenly you're on radio.
Yeah. I always liked it when I was a kid. I just loved the radio, and it's bigger than me. It's something that, you know, like it's almost akin to if I was a musician, the radio is like, you know, my music, I suppose. As wanky as that sounds, but it is. I just love it. I love telling stories. I love listening to radio. It's such an engaging media, and for me, it was always there. I always wanted to do it. But you know, how the hell do you do it?
Mm.
How do you get into it?
And you came. I mean, you had you did the hard yards.
Yes.
So did you doing those kind of late nights? Did you think, is anyone out there? Can I say a swear word to see if I get some reaction? Anything?
No, you sort of, I think in those days, in the early days, when I started in my first commercial radio station at 6KA in Karratha, it was, you're very mindful of what you said on air. And back in those days, it was how you delivered stuff to air. It wasn't the content. Because back in those days as well, there was a lot of mechanics that went with it. You had record players and cart machines that played the ads and reel-to-reel machines that played the tapes. So you had to do all that. And so it was almost like, you know, spinning plates, those guys, you know, did. So you're doing that. So what you said on air really didn't matter. Like, what I mean is, like, you didn't say it, you said just benign stuff.
Yeah.
You would get on air and you'd say, it's 26 past six. Oh, that was the big O. Coming up, more big O. 6KA. It's 26 to six. And that's it. That's all you'd say. And you'd go into another song. These days, you know, because there's computers that do all that, they can get anyone to be on the radio. But, you know, it's about the content. How do you engage someone? How do you get someone to listen to you for that next 15 minutes? So
you've been through, like, radio in the time you were joining, it was like, well, that's going to be dead soon.
Yes.
And you're joining, like, we're selling books, and when I first got involved in books, they're like, well, that's an old tech.
Yes.
That's going to die out.
Yes.
Books have survived. Radio's got better.
Yes.
Like, it seems to have an even bigger audience than TV.
Well, TV's on the chopping block now. TV has to pull its head out of its bum. And that's its. And I say that because it's such a behemoth, and it's so holding on to the old days. And I find that, you know, they're just not keeping up. They're not... like radio, you know, it was foretold that video would kill the radio star, but no, radio killed video and danced on its grave.
Yeah.
And it came back, but radio had the same thing. It had a real thing, and I think these days with social media, everyone is a broadcaster, but not everyone's good at it.
Yeah.
So it's like, and it's almost like if you liken it to the old days in, you know, in Rome or somewhere, like in the forums, and anyone could have their say.
Yeah.
But like a lot of people wouldn't listen to it. They go, oh, you know, what's he talking about? It's a lot of rubbish. So now it's about, you know, engaging content. What can you get someone to?
We're discovering something called audiobooks. And apparently you listen to it. And it's a new technology of listening to people talk to you on headphones and through speakers and the like, and not actually seeing them. It's an extraordinary new technology.
Yeah.
Similar to the thing you're talking about, radio.
Yes, well, radio, that's what they... Yeah, that's
and
what
this podcast thing, it's like, you mean radio, just in little...
It's just in little bits. And, you know, but everyone can do it now, so...
Yeah. But it means that, I mean, radio is one of those... I was thinking about you on motorbikes and thinking, here's a guy who does radio, and most people who are listening to radio are either trapped in their car or at work.
Yes.
And you're out there on the motorbike without listening to nothing.
Yeah, and I like that. I like not... it's the one time... and I've got one motorcycle that's got a stereo in it, which is kind of cool, but I don't listen to the radio on it because it's too distracting. You know, motorcycles, you have to have every part of your wits or you'll die.
Yeah.
As soon as you have a moment of inattention on a motorbike, you know, in a car, like if you hit a curb on a car, you go, oh no, I've dinged my wheel. You hit a curb on a motorbike, you fall off and you've got something, you're lying there and you've got your femur sticking out of the skin and you're going, oh, what have I done? You know, so you can't, there's no time for of inattention.
But as you know, 2014,
that was my last big accident. And that was, you know, to me, that was like a real, and they all are, they're all eye-openers, you know. And having said that, like I fell off, you know, like 3 weeks ago. And as soon as last week, you know, I'm in the city and motorbikes, they're, you can't be impulsive, but you have to be instinctive.
Mm-hmm.
So if your instinct says don't do something, don't do it. And I was running late for an appointment and I was in Favreau Street in the city, which is quite steep. I never parked my bike forward.
Mm-hmm.
into the curb, but a guy in a scooter had parked it, and I was running late, and I thought, oh, well, it seems his hasn't fallen over. So I put my bike forward. As I'm walking into the door, I hear this crash, didn't think anything of it, come back after my meeting, and my bike's, you know, on its side, petrol running down the road, and Gilman went, oh, you know, so I break my rule, my instinctive rule is, you know.
Unless you went on it.
Exactly. Yeah, that's it. Exactly.
I was looking through the list of things that you've done, and it's just like your weekend, you know, where you fix this and you're doing that. You've been on TV, on doing this and the other, on different channels all over the place. Do you like being in front of the camera, or do you prefer to be on radio? What is your...
I'd never swap radio for TV, but I do like TV. I like it because I have a belief that I think I'd do all right at it, but I've never had a great opportunity. It's never been... And it's a hard one because I get called to do a lot of auditions for shows, and I'm the sort of person, once it's in my mind, it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem with TV is you don't know what they want, but they don't know what they want either. So you go and do an audition, and they'll sit there and they'll say, mate, that was great. We want you. And then, you know, 2 weeks later they've gone with Grant Denyer. You know, you sort of go, or Eddie McGuire, or Eddie decides to come back and be the boss.
Yeah.
I mean, leave being the boss and come back and host Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. You know, but I've never had... There's a real technique with TV that I like. There's a real... If you can master that, as sure as you can master inflections when you're talking on the radio, if you can master that engagement on a camera, you know, where you're in there and it looks like you're totally comfortable, that's a real skill. And I'd like to do that. I would be. But everyone wants to do TV. That's the other problem. Every man and his dog's on TV.
Yeah, but and, you know, as you were saying earlier on, it's on. You know, it's got some problems coming up.
Yeah. Well, it has, because they don't. I think I find with a lot of TV stuff there. Yeah. Then that they're too hung up with hanging on to their talent and letting them. You know, like sure, you know, you can't have Eddie McGuire popping up on all those shows. But I think you've got to spread them. You know, you've got to spread the people out. Use that, you know, if someone's good on TV on one show, you know, you could use them on another.
Yeah.
I don't think they need to be so precious about it.
I was reading an article in the Daily Telegraph about you and Amanda talking about with the Today Show and swapping out, and you guys going, well, we'd have to take a pay cut.
Yes.
To get onto, yes. To get on TV.
well, no, but it actually happened. We, years ago, got offered a show. You know, our agents rang us and said, look, this is interesting. A certain TV channel is called, and they're interested in you two doing their morning show. And I said, oh, right, okay. And I said, who's, and she said, well, we can't say who it is. We can't say, this is this whole thing. And then she said, look, you know, the deal is, they want to offer you a 3-year deal. We were re-signing at that moment with the radio. And then I remember Michelle saying, oh, well, it's, you know, they can't match the money. I'm like, well, why are we even talking about it?
Yeah.
And then she goes, yeah. And then she goes, actually, they can't even come close to half of what you're making.
Oh, my.
And I said, Michelle, why? What person? No one would sit there and say, oh, here's a good thing. I'll do this for half the money.
Mm.
If you said to a cement truck driver, oh, mate, you know, I've got this new job. And that's the arrogance of TV. You know, that's the... And the other thing, the thing about it is Amanda and I bring the content to our show. It's not producer driven.
Yeah.
So producers help us, but we don't sit there and read an audio cue and be lost without it. You could put us on any of those shows without an audio cue. What are we talking about? Same sex marriage, truck drivers getting paid less than what they're worth, you know, what? And we would formulate a show. We don't need producers telling us what to do.
You worked with Amanda for 12 years.
Yes.
Now, and you've just decided to go another 3 years. Is that the...
Yes, that's the... Yeah.
And she's written... She was sitting in this chair not long ago, and she's written her memoir.
But she said nice things about me.
Yeah.
She did.
Yeah, yeah, she's good like that. working with someone is one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Reading their memoir is another. Was there anything in your memoir that she... would never have known, and the things that in her memoir you went, holy crap, I never heard that story.
Yeah, she, I think my, with this book, I, you know, because there was such a short timeline to write it, you know, and the written words are a lot harsher than the spoken, and so when I read bits back, Amanda hasn't said it, but I would have liked to have put more warmth about her,
yeah.
You know, and how much she means to me. I think that's a, that's part, you know, and you sort of, men are hopeless at this, but they think, they just take it as, you know, given. Oh, you mean the world to me, and you don't write it in the book. And that's the thing. You know, when I read her book, I really liked the way she wrote, and I just started reading it again just to, you know, not compare, to see how good it is. But she is such a great storyteller, and she's managed to put that female warmth in about me, and I'm sort of thinking, but she hasn't said anything, but I feel, you know, I sort of, and I don't want to mention it to her, because then she'll say, well, why didn't you?
You know, you weren't jealous of the Barry Manilow thing?
No. She's there. I think, like, I'm pretty safe with Barry Manilow. I think I'm okay.
Very recently, and to me it was, it's one of those awards that is kind of a backhanded compliment, but the sexiest man on radio.
Yes.
On radio.
I know. Is that
the joke? I mean, for all time is,
yeah,
you got a great face for radio.
Yeah, it is.
And then you...
And I win it. I know. And Ray Hadley comes second.
Second.
I know. And very closely as well. Like, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't like a landslide. You know, and what happened to Andy Lee or even Hamish Blake, you know? What happened to those guys? They were no
nothing on you. Nothing. They're not even in the top 10.
Well, poor old Dave Hughes didn't even get a mention. He was like, he wouldn't even speak to me. So it was quite, and Kyle, yeah, Kyle was in there. How did it get to this? How did it get to this?
When those sort of things happen, I mean, it happened to you on live on radio.
Yeah.
Sort of presented
yes. Yeah.
It must be very awkward.
It is awkward. Kyle walks in because, like, you know, because where we broadcast our studios, we're in this, like, battery hen studios. So Kyle and Jackie O are just right next door to us, and Mikey and Emma are in the middle from the edge. And so Kyle just walks in and, oh, I don't like this. I said, well, mate, have a look at it. Look. Come on, look at this. Look at the tableau.
Yeah, there's a bit part of me that wished that he'd won, and then he was made to dress up as Wolverine.
Yeah, I would have been, him and as the Jack Thompson thing.
Oh, the Jack Thompson.
My God, they would have had to, you know, there would have been a lot of coverage.
Because if people didn't see it, there was photos in, it was Take 5, wasn't
yeah.
it? Magazine where you played the role of the hunk.
Yes.
Yeah,
it was Paul Merrill, the editor of the magazine, came up with all those ideas. And I have this thing, once it gets past 1 o'clock in the afternoon, you know, if I'm not having a sleep, then that's when anyone runs something by me, because I'm just in a, like, almost a heroin coma. I'll just sit there and say, yeah, sure. So we're at the shoot in the city, and Paul's saying, well, will you dress up as David Hasselhoff? Yeah. Will you take all your clothes off and dress up like Jack Thompson? Yeah. You know, what about, yeah. Yeah, so it's just like that.
It was hysterical. It's so well done.
Oh, I know. It was dreadful. But it was, you know, it's nice. Like, I look at it, this year, it's been a phenomenal year. You know, we, we went number one in the ratings. The book's out. You know, it's been an action-packed year. Because I was saying, oh, what's been going on this year? Nothing's been happening. And then my wife goes, are you kidding me? Look at what you've done this year. And I went, oh, okay.
Some people actually like, because they're, especially when you're busy like you are, and you've got, I mean, 12 years goes like that. If you're to actually take stock, to stop and just have a look at what you've done, can help. It can kind of bring your mind together. It can cause ridiculous darkness, like a Jimmy Barnes. But
yes.
For people who haven't got that dark past, it can be kind of uplifting.
Mm. I think there's something cathartic as well. And you're thinking about Jimmy's book, and I'm loving it at the moment. And I've known him, you know, like, we're not close or anything, but I really respect him and admire him. But that all that time that he went through, you know, I just think, oh my God, you know, you poor guy. Like, and I'm just up to the bit where he's 28 days in rehab, and it's pretty much a mental asylum. You know, the guy was going crazy. And also that story he writes about meeting Michael Hutchins in a, you know, Double Bay just before Michael died. You think, wow, you know, these two guys are ships in the night.
Mm.
And you can look at someone like Jimmy Barnes and go, good on you, Barnesy, you're all right. But you can't have a rock and roll party life all the time.
Yeah.
But then how do you stop that animal? You know, Jimmy Barnes was never going to be a suburban dad sitting at home mowing the lawns. You know, he was designed to be on stage.
Yeah.
But at one part, your body is going to say, oh, you can't do this anymore, Jim.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to die. So it's extraordinary.
So you're sitting down and writing your memoir. Are there things in the past that you found that you were, you know, sort of missing or trying to avoid, that you sort of you sort of dug up or took a close look at?
Not really. No, I there was nothing. You know, that the thing about it, I found that I could have written another 800 pages. You know, every issue that came up. You know, like, and I didn't really get to talk about my dad as far as when he had cancer and died, which I would have liked to have. But you know, with time constraints, yeah. And also the you know, the chapters, we didn't want to blow the book out too much. And also, I think this is a good testing of the waters book.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people that have read it say, I liked it, got a lot of laughs, and it was quick.
Yeah.
You know, it's not my sex life. So, you know.
And so the 50 Shades of 50 does allude to the phenomenal success of 50 Shades of Grey.
Yes.
Is that a cheeky comedic touch, or is it you're looking for the 100 million?
I'm looking for the 100 million. Well, you know, the 50 Shades, I wanted to actually call it 50 is the new 50. And that was happening. And then a friend of mine, good friend of mine, Simone, were around there, and I was telling him I'm writing a book, and and I'm calling it 50 is the new 50. And she said, why don't you call it 50 Shades of 50? And I went, oh, I'll steal that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And then that was it. So I ran it past Alan at New Holland and Fiona, and they just went, yeah, let's go with it. And that was it. So it was it.
Brendan, thank you so much for coming in.
John, thank you. It's been wonderful.
And you can get hold of Brendan Jones, 50 Shades of 50 at booktopia.com.au right now.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.